a wild man.
I want you to struggle, and I want you wrestling with them angels.
Here he is, from Auburn University, Bo Jackson.
The Craig Jern here. Stadium time is 9:06 p.m. Central Daylight Time. Your digital audio device is tuned into the Orange and True podcast, harbored by the friendly folks at collegeandmagnolia.com. Greetings and salutations, Orange and Truthers. It is I, Son of Crow 2 on Twitter. You can find me at Son of Crow on Venmo. To one side of me, as always, the rumor monger, Ryan Starrett, at Ryan S. Starrett. The S stands for showed up on time this week.
The S stands for state, as in Jacksonville State. And, I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit, right?
We're a pro-Cox television program. By that, I mean podcast.
I love Cox.
To the other side of me, giving you the full Fort Payne ASMR you pay so much money for, is the AU chief. Oh, I believe Everton must have got a big win today. C-O-Y-B is what chief wants to tell you.
They did. They did. We got the big win today. Big, big win. It was great. Decore is an amazing footballer. We don't need James. DeMar Gray is the best bargain since Seamus Coleman.
Who was the win? Who was the win over?
Burnley. So, you know.
Sure.
they beat us at home last year.
They're
so,
a professional soccer team, at least. You know, I mean, that's a respectable. They're first league.
they beat Everton at home last year.
Is that like saying South Carolina's SEC?
The difference is South Carolina will be SEC next year. Burnley might not be.
Burnley is firmly mid-table. Thank you.
They were Europa League 2 years ago.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they got a good striker in Chris Wood. They got a bunch of trees on the back line in Tarkowski.
They beat Chelsea last year, too, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, they got a good coach. They're organized. They play really terrible football, soccer, for anybody that's not an idiot listening. And Everton just – they were down 1-0 and came back and won 3-1, and they scored four goals. One was ruled offside in 8 minutes, and it was amazing.
Wow. Also, we have two special guests, first from – collegeandmagnolia.com, one of the writers of our tremendous countdown article series, and I guess like the official sports book of collegeandmagnolia.com, James Jones.
For better or worse, yeah. Hey, zero is off the board. Congrats to Demetrius Robinson, the first number zero to ever score for Auburn.
James. It was off the board, and then off the board again, and then off the board again.
This is where we need a morning show soundboard where we could put in some like cheers right there. Yeah.
James the Greek, as like Jimmy the Greek. This is just don't
I
say
once,
anything.
I refer to him as the Danny Sheridan of
sure.
College of Magnolia.
He is the Danny Sheridan of College of Magnolia.
It's kind of offensive though. So
it really is.
Also joining us
better than that
from also joining us from the Auburn Observer professional personality, Painter Sharpless.
Just getting lucky every time I log on to the internet.
I know. That is the goal every day. Someone said my goal today is to just not lose. And that was on Saturday, and I was like, that's my goal every day. Like I wake up every day.
I think you hit a certain age between 23 and 26, probably closer to 25. Where you're like, oh, we're pumping it up. All right, fine. 27.
These old guys, yeah.
It's just like, hey, you know, it's just if it's not a bad day, it's a great day.
Oh man.
So what I'm hearing is, at some point, you just want to be 1-0 every day.
Oh, buddy.
That's right.
Keep that mindset, right. Ryan.
Yeah. Man.
Get locked
Do
in.
Do we have mindset. Opinions on that? I saw that there were people thinking Franklin was trolling, and then I saw people saying that that's a thing that Franklin does normally on social media. So we're. Has anyone done enough research? Lord knows I haven't about
it seems,
whether or not he really does that.
It seems very coach.
Yeah, so, oh yeah, it seems very, very like
coach. I remember him doing that after the Wisconsin game. Okay. So I think that is a
when I was in high school. When I was in high school, we all had T-shirts that we had to wear under our pads, and every practice because we could only wear our Under Armour shirts for games. Okay, okay. Real smart. So every practice. We wore these gray T-shirts that said "Be Un 11. Okay? Because on a scale of 1 to 10, you want to be an 11. And that was the coach speak nonsense. And literally that was how we would come in. Coach would say, everybody up. Take a knee. And then we'd break it down by 1, 2, 3. And we'd 2 claps, be an 11. Mm-hmm. Problem, the best part about this was the word be and the word an, A-N, when put too close together on a shirt, spells the word bean. And so all of us
being 11.
We would all say being 11 because that's what the shirts looked like.
I mean, if you're from Texas, being 11 and being 11 aren't very far apart. Same thing.
I mean, what time is it? It's about being 11. About being 11. Time to get home. Classic, like classic high school kids making fun of the coach, not bought in. So
nice.
I could definitely see 1-0 mindset becoming a being 11 mindset. But it seems like the Harsin has these guys, for better or worse, like hopefully for better, they're locked in. Like I believe they might be locked into the 1-0 mindset nonsense. Or not nonsense, sorry, coach speak.
It's, you know what, it's no dumber than any of the other win the day,
all in.
All the other things.
Auburn Fest, and there was Tough and Together, I think.
Auburn Fest was the
imagine thinking that Auburn Fest was first. Y'all don't remember Attitude? Audacity?
Audacity. Dude, the Attitude one, I want an Attitude t-shirt so bad. I would pay American dollars for an Auburn Attitude t-shirt.
That's right in the zone of me, you know, coming into my own as an Auburn fan.
Because
let me derail this completely. But did Tony Barbie ever try to coin a phrase?
Who saw Burn?
Didn't care that much.
He'd have to be interested to do that.
Have to get him off the ball.
Love playing golf. That guy was definitely big into that.
There was the Cliff Dwellers.
Can we just blame him for saying "Let's go Big Blue"?
Oh,
and
man, there it is. James is holding up an Attitude sign. James has his background blurred on Skype, which is great because when he drinks, it looks like his can is blurred out because we didn't pay enough for the advertiser. This is the visual medium. Hey.
That's kind of how it looked like in Southeastern Saturday night, to be honest. Yeah. So.
This is not Seagram's gin because I'm not drinking it and they're not paying me for it.
Oh, wow. Look at you. That's a nice reference right there.
Wait, are you wearing your Polk State shirt?
I am.
Heck yeah. Shout out to Ken.
We should probably start broadcasting this.
Shout out to Caribou Lou.
All right.
I mean, I feel like that's where the reference is coming from. Am I wrong, James Jones?
The Polk State basketball shirt?
No. I'm thinking of a
song by Tech Nine.
All right. There we go.
Yeah. I got you, Jit Painter. guys, that brought us to a conversation. We didn't have this on the show notes, Ryan, but I'm going to go ahead and jump into it because I think that Painter would enjoy this conversation. We had this on the Slack. Shouldn't they just let the senior football players get the aux for the games? Like, they should be the ones picking the songs that play in the stadium. Is that right?
They're the most mature. They've been there the longest. They've earned the seniority, but they're still young enough to be into TikTok.
Right. Because this is my hottest Auburn take. Okay. So I'm going out on a big limb that's going to probably crash behind me. We don't need to keep playing All the Above and All I Do Is Win.
Wow. Well, young Dave McKinney would have questions for you.
I understand.
So it's not like they played them, but they weren't featured. They have been phased out, put on the back burner.
We are too
for certain events.
Presidential terms from that song. Okay? The U.S. has gone to, not qualified for, and is now trying to qualify for a third World Cup since 2010.
That's true.
So I think we can maybe phase those out and get some. And here's the other thing. Other rap songs have been released in the last 11 years.
That's true.
DJ Khaled probably put 4 out this week.
I don't know. That was a special moment, though.
It was.
Yeah.
It was.
Won a national championship.
I'm going to throw this out for you. played in the Huntsville Madison County Auburn Club golf tournament today, and literally somebody's Bluetooth speaker was playing "All I Do Is Win" right before they teed off on number 13.
How old were they? Ballpark enough. Gotta be at least 29.
Youngest person in there had to be at least 45.
There we go. That makes sense. They were really feeling themselves.
Did 2013 didn't have a song, did they? 2013 didn't have like a – there wasn't a musical touchstone for that year.
No, not really.
I think we're all too confused about how it was going that well.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So
the Tunnel video was Fall Out Boy that year, I think.
Oh, perfect. Right.
Oh.
Relevant.
Oh, that's not good.
They kept it relevant in 2013.
Yeah, the poor mups. We lit them.
But, you know, there's other moments in Auburn history with good music. I mean, there's the Final Four run, and we've got Jared. So
yeah. See?
And look, and right, as, nice the, plug. As the creator of We've Got Jared, if they were to play that song in the arena this year, I would be like, man, come on, guys. Let's.
I don't know. Unless he was in the arena, they shouldn't play it.
I'd have a problem with it if it was like the song. Like if they were trying to make it the song that they play all the time. But they, you know, they play it once and they're like, oh, yeah, I guess that's true. Song.
Like if they brought that back, like
I remember when I was 5 and that we went to that game, and now right. I'm in college.
Because those the freshmen currently at Auburn, how old were they in 2010?
Between 8 and it's between 7 and 11, somewhere in there.
Yikes, guys! And that,
we're coming up on a time when there are students at Auburn who were born after Jason Campbell graduated.
Yeah, Ryan, Jesus.
And that's the thing. We shouldn't be playing rap music from the Jason Campbell era. And look, that's my era. And Ryan, you're wrong. That's my era, but I don't think that my era should dictate the game experience for our beloved boys in blue.
It's very progressive of you.
I don't know. It's still I'm going to have to, again, disagree on "All I Do Is Win." I don't know about "All the Above." Yeah, I was never a huge fan except for what Cam did when we played "All of the Above." But like if you go out to Skybar or Coyotes Southeastern, all these kids go crazy if that song comes on. Like it's like a thing still. So
I think the winning associated with it, something that is right. Yeah, you know,
that does
up and down for an Auburn football program is.
Yeah, I also think
to translate.
It would be weird if, I don't know, they were playing it at Alabama at this point, because it's like, why aren't you playing this old song? But
they're still playing "Dixieland Delight."
Well,
Alabama's 12th best song.
Yeah, not even top 10.
Another episode of the show we've done before, right?
We've done that.
Top 10 Alabama songs.
I don't know if Painter's gone back that far in the catalog, but we did a Chief Ranks the Top 10 Alabama Songs by the band Alabama. All right. Agree to disagree. We'll move on to Auburn Soccer, who is currently the first Auburn athletic team to catch an L in 2021 academic season. But that loss was if there's anything to take away from a loss, to call it a moral victory, that's the only one you might get on the schedule. They beat Alabama A&M 5-0 in soccer language. That game was not really much of a game.
It was a warm-up.
I'm pretty sure Auburn could have played left-footed and beaten Alabama A&M. But then they turned around and lost to number one Florida State, a team that was, I mean, just watching them play, if you didn't know anything about soccer, your first inclination was, wow, that team is much bigger than the other team. Like, Florida State was big. Their defenders were large, not like big, but like very tall. They had a tall team. They seemed to have a grip on possession that was inexhaustible. Like, it was difficult for Auburn to get the rock. Yeah, I read that in the first half it was 73% possession for Florida State. That's ridiculous.
I kind of guesstimated that it was like a 35-10 split in minutes in possession. And I mean, they just didn't make any mistakes. Every touch counted. No pass was missed. and when Auburn could get the ball, there were a few like loose balls Auburn could get and take a shot, but nothing sustained on that end for the whole first half.
And they scored their first goal in like seconds from the tip.
Yeah, less than 30 seconds. And Beto Olsen, who we talked about last week, the Florida's leading scorer last year, now Florida State's leading scorer this year.
I can't imagine that, first of all, the quote-unquote or the hashtag narrative or the hashtag discourse on if the best player from one contending school in the SEC transferred to the like a rival school. Like if Auburn's best player, if they could say Tank, transferred this offseason to Alabama.
To Georgia. I mean, that would have happened.
You know, I don't, it would be an interesting thing if it did.
I think if he transferred to Georgia, it would be a non-stop. Every Auburn game, every Georgia game would be brought up. Maybe even like every CBS game, it would get brought up, no matter who's playing. But this happened in Florida, in the state of Florida in soccer. Anyway, second half, Auburn got a goal in the 54th and then hung in. Like they had multiple free kicks and chances in the last 10 minutes to try to catch the tie. But
yeah. I'm sure you'll be surprised, but a game with Florida State got a little bit chippy in any sport.
It was nuts.
I mean, there was two yellow cards in the last 20 minutes or so.
Can I get any comments on the alleged kick into the crowd?
No, because alleged.
That is the only thing that, that I hear about. I gather very little, as I usually do from any of this game.
Yeah. So I don't know what the narrative is on it, but essentially it was there was a ball out of play, and you know, in college soccer, there's not always a ball right there. So someone was trying to run down, give it to somebody. Another ball had been tossed onto the field, and she kicked it away. Like all the way up into the stands, fourth day player.
To waste time.
I mean, I don't. I mean, it was still fairly early in the second half. I mean,
it's not as egregious as the MLS. There was an MLS game this last week where the guy kicked the ball out of bounds, ran up, took the ball from the ball boy, and punted it into the crowd, so the other guy couldn't get it. It was the greatest thing I've ever seen. But yes, this was egregious in terms. And then the difference is in college soccer, the referee, if he or she sees this,
can stop the clock.
Right. It's the only code of association football in which the referees can stop the clock. And they didn't see it, apparently. Because they would have. That's one of the things they would have stopped the clock for.
But it really didn't stop play more than, you know, 5 seconds at the most, because there was already another ball there. That was the whole issue. She didn't kick the only ball there out of play. So I don't know. I mean, it was a hard-fought game, and seeing what this Florida State team has done to the rest of its schedule so far, I mean, this just kind of proves that this Auburn Tiger team is a legitimate top-10 team and should have pretty big postseason aspirations.
I threw it on in the background of my nephew's fourth birthday party, so it was. That's how committed I am to this game. Auburn's, I think, still in the catbird seat. In the conference at this point, like they're one of the best teams.
I believe they're the only ranked team in the conference, unless that's changed.
No, A&M's still ranked, right? A&M was top 15.
So they were number 9 when Florida State played them in week one. Florida State won 1-0 there. I don't know if they're still ranked or not, but
last I checked, they were at least last week when we were doing this show. A&M was still ranked in the top 15. Auburn plays Georgia on Friday night, 6:30, and that's an away game, I believe. That's a home game. Okay,
so I really need these games to kick off around 8, so I can make it.
Where you got to be, bro?
Kids go to bed around 8. I can't
take them to the game. It's free.
Yeah, but then we'd have to leave early. It's the whole thing.
Albie's there.
That's true.
He can babysit the kids.
That's true.
One of the other Georgia is one of the better teams in the conference too. LSU is number 8, and Tennessee is number 10. So there are a lot of top 15 teams. Arkansas is number 14, and then
you know what? I'm typing it out in the Slack. I'm just going to say it. I was letting y'all go. Texas A&M is 15th, Let's see. And then South Carolina 22nd. We are 16th entering the weekend. Well, no, this is updated. So I think this is
This is one of my favorite activities that we do. I say something in fur. He's like, look, I want to be polite, but you might have missed this.
So let's take a quick break, pay the bills, and come back and talk hoops.
Hi, this is Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at NYU Stern School of Business and host of the Prof G Pod. If you don't know me, the New York Times calls me the Howard Stern of business. Kara Swisher, super friggin' insightful, and Elon Musk, an insufferable numbskull. I think we're going to make up. I think we're going to go somewhere and do ketamine together. Each week on my show, the Prop G Pod, we bring you insights from Blue Flame thinkers, including my nemesis, Adam Grant. Super smart guy. My nemesis because he's really good. Or one of our favorite journalists, Fareed Zakaria. Fareed's a total gangster. And not only that, we provide listeners with a markets-driven episode every Monday. We answer our listeners' questions about business, big tech, and career pivots every Wednesday and get to listen to the sweet sound of George Hahn reading our newsletter every Saturday. That's right. The Prop G Pod is in your feeds four times a week. I'm like AOL in the 90s. To resist is futile. Put your hand into a box of cereal. Is it a tasty, sugary snack? Nope. It's the dog.
And we're back 20 minutes and 17 seconds into a very professional podcast. The Orange and True Podcast. We're talking basketball. Tip off at Tumors. It's coming back. Everyone loved it. Why not get everyone back together on October the 7th? That's before the Georgia game. We'll be without Alan Flanagan, though, unfortunately. And I think that's... I mean, you know, it'd be really awful really nice to have JT Thor right about now. But even without Thor, I think the team's going to be okay. Because that's an opportunity for some younger person or who knows to play a little more minutes and get ready for conference play when Flan gets back. I read that Flan was the top 25 prospect currently.
Dang.
So that's a big hit for everybody.
As much as we trust prospect rankings for the NBA right now.
This was the worldwide leaders prospect rankings, at least, and not Joe's NBADraft.com or whatever it's called.
No, you're right. ESPN has him as the number 19 ranked NBA draft prospect. So
that's crazy.
We'll see what that means. But yeah, I mean, I think it's all well and good to poke fun at this, given how volatile draft rankings can be. Mm-hmm. But it's not insignificant, given that he is talented. He played out of position and is the most experienced player on Auburn's team.
Best on-ball defender, I think, too.
Yeah, that was the difference between Flan this year and the year before, was his defense had gotten good, stayed good, and his offense had gotten outrageous. He went from a guy you didn't really know what his role was on the offense to a guy where you could run the entire thing through him. Yeah, he was almost a non-factor, and then he became the factor. I think
he played point guard for us for a while last year.
Yeah, man. So did I think. Yeah, so I think
he'll be back. It looks like probably around the end of non-con play. I mean, it's a big loss, but and hopefully he's able to come back and be healthy, be 100% during conference play. But it's only going to help the bottom of the roster get more minutes, get more experience in these early games.
Yeah,
I'm curious what the breakdown is though. I mean, do they slide Jabari down to the three? And I would hesitate to do that because I don't think you want to take your top five player and play him out of position for half of his only season here.
No, I hope we just get more Chris Moore.
I think that might be what we see.
More Chris Moore. I want the student section chanting that. Awesome. Anytime he's not in the game, they should be chanting more Chris Moore. That dude's legit. I love Chris Moore. Minutes are good minutes.
He's one of those guys that, like, when you see him, James, you and I saw him on Sanford Lawn at a football game.
Brag.
So it was funny. There, him, Jabari, and Wendell, and maybe one other guy were playing football on Sanford Lawn. Wendell was trying to cover Jabari. Did not go well for him. But Chris Moore's one of those guys that he is not just tall, but he is a massive person.
Yeah.
He's built out like top five NFL draft pick.
He's from the Malik Dunbar camp of bigger than you think.
He's a lot bigger than Malik.
Yeah.
I'm real looking forward to him. He played awesome in the limited minutes he had last year. I think we'll see a lot of three. Is my point. I wouldn't be surprised if Devin starts there, at least for the first couple games. But seeing as we only have three other guards, Devin's got to play a lot too.
Sure.
So,
all right, let's move on to the oblong ball. Auburn beat Alabama State 62-0. It's got to be. I didn't check the Josh Dubb tweets about this, but I can't imagine Auburn has two back-to-back 60-point outings.
1932.
There it is.
Wow. They actually said it in the stadium as Ryan and I were walking out.
Can we play Does Crow Know since you did it to me?
Sure.
Who was the coach in 1932?
Is that Mike Donahue?
That's what I said.
Dang.
It was not.
Who was it?
James, you're the one that asked me.
It was Chet Wynn.
That's right.
I actually got it wrong. I thought it might have been time for Jack Maher, but that was Chet Wynn.
Chet Wynn sounds like the son of the son no one talks about from the casino family. Oh, this is Chet Wynn. He owns a couple of NASCAR teams.
The captain of the team was Jimmy Hitchcock. So first ever. First All American.
All right, guys. Is there anything
Auburn team as well?
We actually want to talk about the Alabama State game. They were very good.
I do want to talk about the Kobe McLean and his quote after the game of, you know, he had a fantastic game all over the place, 10 tackles, 7 solo, so kind of doing a lot of the dirty work himself. And his quote was, yeah, I shoot for double digits every game, but I should have had 15.
Love it.
But I didn't play the fourth. So.
He eats tackles, man. I love it. I think, yeah, hopefully future Dallas Cowboys, Kobe McLean. Tank was tank, but
it was a boring 11 yards per carry.
Yeah,
which is crazy for somebody that hasn't even played 10 games yet. I don't think.
And Hunter,
that was a 10th game.
It was just clearly obvious that there was nobody on the other side of the ball that like should have even been on the field with him. So like anytime
I will give that their Alabama State defense credit. I mean,
they tried.
They played as well as I could have ever imagined. They could have in that first half. I mean,
sure.
They were there to hit. Didn't always work out for them, but they had some.
I think it's crazy we're talking so much about Tank, considering he's not even the leading rusher on this team right now.
Hunter was just incredible.
He's got 2 touchdowns on the season. Tank doesn't have, but I think 1, right?
Because he didn't score against Alabama State. Is a guy that didn't play, and it was Sean Shivers, because we showed that we've got another guy that can probably deserve some of those touches that may have been coming Shivers' way this year.
Yeah, they're different backs, though, and not really a change of pace like Shivers
is.
He's more of like, hey, if Tank goes down, we've got a decent enough for those types of carries.
Yeah.
Number 0, did Josh talk about Robertson about how many times Auburn's had 3 touchdowns from 1 receiver in a game? Because I can't imagine it's a much. It's got to be the only time that's ever happened. Like, I can't. I was racking my brain. When was the last time Auburn had 3 touchdowns from the same wide receiver in a game?
It wouldn't surprise me if Ricardo Lewis did it once. Especially if you include a rushing touchdown, which Robertson had. I know that's not the receiving record. That belongs to Alexander Wright, who had 4 on 5 catches against Pacific in 1989.
It wouldn't shock me if that was the most since 89.
It may be. It really may be.
If you're listening to this, Josh, which I know you are, let me know.
It was nice to see him kind of get cut loose. They really only threw him like maybe 1 hitch and a couple of screens last week.
Yeah.
And then, you know, literally the first third and long of the game was designed for him to come across the middle, catch the football, and get upfield with it. And most importantly, get the first down.
Yeah.
On a square end.
He only had three catches and a carry. He had three touchdowns.
Yeah, that was the only time he touched the ball outside of punt returns that he did not score a touchdown was that third down conversion. The only thing I will say, and he had a very good punt return as well. The only thing I will say is we had to, because he was filling in as punt returner for Javarius Johnson, there was an issue on punt coverage because Owen Papo was also on punt coverage. So they were putting a number 12 jersey on on Robertson, and then one punt return, they forgot to put him on.
Yeah.
And apparently the only person that saw it and was trying to figure out was both Shedrick Jackson, who's trying to run in and replace him, and John Samuel Schenker. Everyone was screaming, and it happened in our end zone is the only reason I noticed it, but like everyone is screaming at him to come off the field, and he's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
But we had two number zeros on the field at that point.
Divide by zero. So this week we got Penn State. And as we do every week, the only podcast with the – it's not courage. It's more just like we're conscientious. We think about the listener.
The integrity.
Yeah. I'm thinking about you. And we're the only podcast, Painter, that lets the listeners know what time the game is. The game's going to be at 6:30 Central. So plan accordingly.
God's time.
Since 6:30 Central, there's a lot of people who listen to this podcast who might not know how to look that up, who every week they're like, somebody needs to tell me what time the Auburn game kicks. It's probably going to kick at 6:35, if I had to guess.
And from what I understand, there's one way in and one way out of Happy Valley. So you guys plan accordingly to getting into the game for your tailgating and plan accordingly to get home late if you're leaving Happy Valley.
Yeah, and I know people who are flying into like parts very far from State College.
Well, there's really that's all you can do.
Pittsburgh, pretty much.
People flying to Pittsburgh
or Philly.
I heard somebody talking about flying into DC, and DC not close.
I'm going DC to Harrisburg. I don't know if that was me, but coincidentally, I am flying into DC and then driving 2.5-3 hours to Harrisburg.
And then someone I know
I'm usually doxing myself on the Observer, so there you go.
I heard somebody talking about flying into somewhere in West Virginia. I was like, guys, that is – you might as well just drive at this point.
So friend of the show, Gulson, is driving, and I suddenly got jealous because he's leaving Thursday, and I made peace with not going. But then he said he's stopping in – he's going to the Mountaineers campus. He's going to stay there overnight. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, man, that would have been great.
Burn a sofa.
Yeah.
Sing a song that's, as we all know, is not about West Virginia, but is actually about the western part of Virginia.
Yeah. It does feel like two of the most famous songs in college football lore are not about the respective states in which they sing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's strange.
Auburn is favored in this game.
No, wait.
There's dogs in this game. There's 6-point dogs in this game.
6-point dogs? Come on.
Yeah.
How much? It was around 7.5, depending on when you looked at the beginning of the week. How much has that moved? Is it now at 6? Am I looking at a 1.5?
5.5. Down to 5.5 now.
Yeah, I've seen 5.5.
We've identified the gamblers in the group.
Yep. Hypothetically, as an Alabama resident, I would never.
FPI on ESPN's app has Penn State with a 62% chance of winning this game. So, but I don't think
we all feel like this comes down to 3 or 4 plays where, like, which is the lamest analysis I could possibly guest appear on and give you and say, a touchdown score game.
I think
comes down to 3 or 4 plays. But, you know, seriously, like, Bo Nix has an open man. Does he hit him? Does the receiver catch it? Does Auburn have a chance at a turnover that it drops? What are we looking at here when these teams are both somewhere around 65% in the blue chip ratio? I like a lot about Auburn's defense, especially given that Penn State couldn't generate much offense against Wisconsin. Penn State's at home, but Auburn hasn't had to tilt its hand at all given the two teams it's played. Like, there's all these different things you can try to convince yourself about. At the end of the day, I look back and go, well, Auburn hasn't really been very good on the road for half a decade, and that includes a couple of seasons with Bo Nix.
And Penn State's quarterback, yeah. Penn State's quarterback is
Big Ten Bo Nix,
or we can call hot dish Bo.
I always have a trouble taking any Big Ten team seriously that's not named Ohio State. I just do. I just don't.
I mean, last time it was Purdue, right?
So yeah, right.
Northwestern. I do not remember the Northwestern and Minnesota games.
Yeah.
Midday New Year's Day, not a good time.
I don't count any of our bowl games.
I count the Purdue one. That one was awesome.
Yeah, I didn't count that one either. So
I think
sidebar. What is the stance of this organization on bowl games? Because there is definitely a line of thinking which bowl games don't matter. There's a lot of thinking that maybe you can carry some momentum into it. Either way, does this particular podcast care about bowl games?
I think we're all bowl practices matter.
The general lack of
matter.
Success over the last couple of seasons.
I think only we're all bowl practice matters. Bowl games don't.
Yeah, that's true.
I usually enjoy other teams' bowl games more than our own. For sure.
Ryan, I think that's because
we're terrible at them.
You came of age in a time when we were terrible at them. Yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think the A-Day game is a little bit less important than bowl games, but I don't not that much less important. These are exhibition contests.
Let me just
contests.
Say the one bowl game I did care about was Minnesota because we were trying to get the 10 wins.
Yeah.
And I actually was a little bitter about that, but that's a me thing.
These are friendlies. I mean, you can't read into friendlies.
When we lose, it's just a bummer when you lose. Like, there's nothing good because
you've had this gap of weeks of no Auburn football, and you've been reading about whatever team you haven't played in 30 years, and you're going to play them in some NFL stadium in Florida, and it's going to be kind of weird and kind of interesting. What jerseys are going to wear? Special shoes? Who knows? And then
it's first date?
4 hours of terrible.
Yeah, kind of, Ryan. It's kind of a first
And here's
day.
The other thing. It's usually around New Year's Eve, which is the lamest of all holidays. So you kind of have this like – because New Year's Eve is all about it's going to be great. It's going to be a new year. We're going to have a big party. It always disappoints. And then you follow that up with a bowl game that disappoints. Yeah. Terrible.
Yeah. And all of the Florida bowl games just run together for me. No one on this podcast has watched more Auburn football probably than me, especially not in person. And I can't keep straight which one's in Tampa and which one's in Orlando and where we played who where.
Which one's the Bad Boy Mowers Gasparilla Bowl? We haven't ever gone to that one.
That one we haven't played because that's the one they play in that I don't know. Is it still Tropicana? Is it something else? I don't know. It's wherever the Rays
play. That's the worst stadium in baseball.
Yeah.
I
want to see Auburn at a Sun Bowl.
You sure, both,
I can
bro.
Get excited for that.
The first, I'll tell y'all this, the first bowl game I ever went to was the 1996 Outback Bowl. It was in Tampa Stadium. And when I say Tampa Stadium, what Chris Berman used to call the Big Sombrero.
Mm-hmm.
So this was before the stadium with the pirate ship existed, Raymond James or whatever it's called now. And I watched Penn State absolutely beat the tar out of a team that was quarterbacked by a man with the last name Nix.
Did you?
So I would rather not do that again.
Speaking of Tampa, did you guys watch – don't worry, we'll get to the Penn State game at some point. Did you guys watch the unveiling of the Super Bowl banner before Cowboys-Bucks?
I did not.
In Tampa? Okay.
As a full-on Tampa Bay hater, no.
Guys, they had this thing under a banner, under like a sheet, so no one could see it. And they unveil it. And this son of a gun, this banner is not as wide as the windows of the luxury box above it. It looks like it's the size of a normal flag.
Did they get the same company that made those banners for Auburn basketball to do these? Because those things are
If you look at the same day, this week, the same day, the people were showing online the Kansas City Chief unveiling their banner for their Super Bowl win 2 years ago. And it's like half of the – it's like almost half of a side of Arrowhead.
And I don't understand why you put that. Tampa is just like, look, we know that you guys forget about us, and that is why you can forget about this banner as well.
I wonder if it's them thinking we're going to put a bunch up.
About the north side of the stadium on this podcast? Because Lord knows the south side has gotten a big TV and a not-so-necessary press box.
Yes.
They need to close it in. That's my opinion. Bring the upper deck all the way around. Close
real
it.
Hot take there, Ryan. They've needed to do that for a long time. There's been all kinds of excuses. Supposedly there's a creek bed there that prevents it from happening.
They need to go back to having the tiger with the eyes that light up.
Well, you know, there was a plan for that. and then there was a regime change that sort of halted that plan.
Is there somebody in charge now who is, you know, a little penny pincher?
You could have ended that sentence with "in charge now."
There's more than one someone in charge now.
Yeah, there's the guy they brought in does not like to spend money, apparently. So, that's allegedly. I don't have any actual knowledge.
As a person,
it's interesting that 90s luxury could perhaps be better than anything we have in 2020 some, which is the tiger eyes lighting up depending on the decimal or decibel level.
That's right.
And some of that I think is simply because it's just nice to not see advertising.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Between the play clock going from 40 seconds to 24 seconds. It's like, oh, apparently it's loud in here. I didn't know that.
I want the jumping tigers back, but
those were even better because you had to get really loud. That would happen like twice a year.
Yeah,
is that those would light up. Being someone that has to stare at the north end zone scoreboard all the time and lean forward and look to the right to actually see the big one, I would love for literally any kind of video board to be in that end zone.
Yeah,
my worry is that because of the way the sun comes behind, I love the new press box because that means I'm in the shade so much earlier.
So that's interesting. There's like 4,000 people that like the new press box, basically. Yeah.
And all of us are in section 13.
Well, it's just a weird thing that they built. Like that press box should have been and probably was supposed to be part of like a big project where we like over, let's say, 15 years, fill in the rest of the stadium, put everything, you know, do all kinds of other stuff, make the upper deck go all the way around, whatever. And nope, they just built that, and that was it.
I guess as someone who's a perpetual hater, so you should take everything I say with a grain of salt, like it doesn't seem like a particularly good spot for the media, but then again, it's like, well, no one really cares what the media members think. Yeah. So that's totally fair. It's also just like it was an objectively worse spot to put them in. And then the big TV was sort of like a time and moment where it was like we're trying to go for bigger and better. And then you look at Alabama and they're like sort of – or even LSU and like – or A&M. And they put the brick facade out there and it's like – yeah, I just rather the stadium look nice, and then you guys put TVs in the corners where everyone can see it.
My assumption there was that Jay Jacobs did a survey. You know, they did a giant survey of why people go to games and why they don't go to games anymore, and everybody said, "Well, I have a big TV at home." And Jay Jacobs says, "Well, here is the biggest TV in the world.
It's nice. Our seats that we sit in are not great for viewing on-field action, but now I have a giant TV that I can just look at, which is a curse as well. You find your eyes just being drawn to it and not watching anything on the – like even when a play's happening on the field, your eyes just drift up to this giant TV.
As a Cowboys fan, I can tell you right now that the reason why Cowboys Stadium is so quiet – is because everyone is watching the game on the big TV. Nobody's watching the game. Everybody's looking at the game because the TVs are so big. And we'll talk about the Penn State game in a second.
Texas, what a game, by the way. Yeah. Absolutely love the Texas team being bad and the Arkansas team being fine and then treating Arkansas as if they've accomplished something. And we should all appreciate that they probably have done well with what it is they have on the roster, but a certain commentator, color commentator, naming KJ Jefferson as a Cam Newton-like runner did seem like a stretch.
Oh, yeah. He's Cam Newton-like in that he runs.
Sure.
Sure. There's a lot of people like that.
We did not have any audio as we watched that game, and it just seemed absurd because every time we looked up, Arkansas was just running all over Texas again.
It was weird to see Texas get beat that bad on the lines, because that's normally when they're bad, it's quarterback play, but they're always serviceable on the offensive line. But not anymore. This is about as bad as it can get as a person who watches a lot of Texas football, because I'm around people who are watching it, and that's what people talk about. To the point where I heard old women discussing the horns at work today that I don't think watched football at all, but it was just like, did you see what happened to Texas? Almost like did you hear about this horrible thing that has happened in the world?
It's like David Foster Wallace, where like you may never have read Infinite Jest, yes, but you know that he's kind of a famous author that's right, controversial, and it's like Texas hasn't been good for 15 years. So if you're 19 years old, it's like, well, what's this thing I'm watching?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, you can think of it as they're a not near as good version of Oklahoma in the same conference. And what happens to Oklahoma when they play good SEC teams is what happened to Texas when they played a middle of the road SEC team.
Well, I want to go back to the Infinite Jest reference, because it's very similar to the way Texas football has gone in the last. Is there a plot to Infinite Jest? Nobody knows. Is there a plan in Austin? Nobody knows. It is meandering at best. A lot of money is made off of it, but not a lot of plot is put into it.
And it's tough to hear Ryan correctly point out Oklahoma's losses in the playoffs to other SEC teams while Auburn is absolutely getting murked. You know, I mean,
we beat playoff teams.
2016, and it's just like, well, Sean White's arm was hurt, and it's like, yeah, I don't know if that's the thing.
Oklahoma, I think, and this is, I don't like Oklahoma, but I think a lot of SEC fans are going to be in for a rude awakening at just how good of a program they've got going up there. They're going to win a lot of games in the SEC, a lot of games that people are like, oh, they're not going to beat. Pick a team, and they're going to beat them, and they're going to score a billion points doing it, because they throw NFL quarterbacks out there, and then when that guy graduates, like, they throw another
Alabama
one out there.
Georgia, it's like, well, they're never, ever, ever going to not be a top 12 team as soon as we move to that format.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lincoln Riley has won his conference every single year he's been in Norman.
Well, there's been no competition.
You still got to go out and win the games. Like, that's nuts.
Their best competition has been Iowa State.
My a buddy of mine, listener to the pod tonight, and Steve, we were talking earlier. We were talking earlier about what happened to Texas. Like, why aren't they getting the talent that they used to get? And I'm like, well, they're all going to Oklahoma and LSU and Alabama and Clemson and Ohio State and Georgia.
And I think Texas A&M too. Like, we can't forget that Jimbo Fisher is just inept. Like,
especially defensive linemen.
So that's where we went with that conversation, was with, you know, Texas A&M stealing stuff from him, and I'm like, have they really though? And we were looking at it, and he went and looked.
Colorado didn't think so.
he went to see who. I was like, were Texas and Texas A&M battling for people? And he went and looked at Myles Garrett specifically, and he didn't have a recruiter from Texas listed. So Texas A&M is dropping bags for dudes for sure. But and Texas is probably sitting over there thinking, oh, well, they'll just come here because, you know, we got the horns logo.
There's a lot of people in Austin who just think that they can walk up and go, oh, every kid grew up wanting to come play for Texas. And not
anymore.
Not any kids did. All right. So I teased it earlier, but we're going to talk about the Penn State game.
Since we're still on other stuff. Before we go, Jacksonville State.
Oh,
hope we never talk about it.
took them down, took the Seminoles down, and it was great. It was amazing.
I think better than the actual result, which is hard to beat given some of the memes we got out of it, was simply the response to why it was they were playing the type of defense that they were playing in that moment.
Yeah.
And then they lied about it.
Yeah.
Oh, there's time left. They could get a field goal. It was 6 seconds.
Yeah.
Like
from the other 40.
Yeah. If the guy that, you know, caught the touchdown pass had ran a hitch right at the sticks at like the 50-yard line, caught it, and immediately gone out of bounds, they would have been at about like the 48-yard line. You're still not in field goal range, and at that point, there's 2 seconds left.
And look, it is so easy to pick apart these coaches because they are making these decisions in real time. But like that was one where it's like, I don't know, man.
No, and
I will say, if they're making that decision in real time, that's the problem.
It's like they fired the guy before him.
That's a decision that should be made months before.
They gave Willie Taggart so few years to get that thing right, to bring in somebody that makes that decision. That's the real issue.
I mean, Jimbo Fisher did this to them, though. That's what no one wants to believe, that he's the genesis of all this. He ran that program into the ground and peaced out, took a job where he's guaranteed he's going to make $100 million from them.
Well, they gave him a raise.
I know. Did. Yes, he finished fifth in a season where everybody sucked.
Yeah.
Well, it's a point that Ferg and probably others besides Justin Ferguson have made, but Ferg was one of the first that I heard make it. I think it still stands, which is that when Jimbo Fisher had the most talent in that conference, it was no problem. The moment that Clemson was able to compete with them or surpass them in talent, suddenly Jimbo Fisher didn't seem to be so impressive. Alabama, Georgia, LSU, maybe Florida, maybe Auburn. It's like, you expect them to just run through all those teams?
When he ran out the door, too, it was because they were in a situation like Auburn is now, where their line sucked, right? Am I remembering that correctly? Like,
no, their offensive line has been absolutely terrible.
Yes.
They were in the program 2 years ago where they didn't have a 2D on the offensive line going into the season. They said we're comfortable with like 9 guys or 8 guys. That they couldn't run a full practice with 2 offensive lines. That was how bad it was. Yeah, I mean they were national title in 13, playoffs in 14, and 2 years later they're losing 63-20 against Louisville. That's a nosedive. Against the Heisman Trophy winner and future MVP, but still.
And you know, they should have been able to figure it out post Jimbo, but they haven't. Like,
based on the conference they're in,
right? Them losing to Jacksonville State is not Jimbo's fault, but he started them on this path. I mean, he almost lost to them, so that's another thing. I guess we got our shots, but
as an Auburn fan, it's like this is kind of nice. A couple of years later.
Yeah, that's true. It's nice to see them fall flat on their face.
All right, well, 6:30 p.m. on Saturday, Auburn's playing Penn State.
There we go.
And Penn State beat Wisconsin in the most brutal football game I've watched in a long time. and then they beat Ball State, who is much worse than Wisconsin.
But not bad.
Not bad.
They're a MAC team. They're pretty good.
They went 4-5 last year because they played 9 games. Because of the global pandemic that is still gripping us all. They lost the first 5 games of that season and then won 4 straight. So the opposite of a normal Texas A&M year. And speaking of the Aggies. And as we mentioned earlier, Sean Clifford is hot dish Bo Nix. He is a 3-year starter, never really completed more than 65% of his passes. He's got, Ryan has noted, less than 8 YPA this year, which is not great when you're playing Ball State. Like, that should have bumped up your yards per attempt. Their running back is okay, I guess. He's fine.
Yeah, I mean, he was a big-time recruit. He's had injury issues. No, Kane.
Auburn recruited him.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I, he's a guy I remember from that recruiting cycle. Had a pretty good freshman year and then got hurt on his fourth carry or third carry against Indiana in the opener last year.
I went and looked it up because I remember him as a recruit as well. His official visit was the day of the 2018 Tennessee game.
Ah, so that's why he's not a Tiger. Okay.
Yeah.
I get it, man. I get it, Noah.
I would not have come here either. That was my experience.
And then he met old Key and Peele, head coach at Penn State. I was like, man, this guy rules. If you don't really remember that, you know, they actually looked exactly alike.
Yeah, they were handing the ball to handing and throwing the ball to Saquon Barkley 25 to 30 times a game, and getting him to be the number two pick in the draft because David Gettleman is an idiot, having suffered through him being the GM of my favorite football team for a while. But yeah, I mean, it's you look at that. I don't have to play. I don't have to get beat up in the SEC all the time, but I get to be a feature back at a major school. You know, it's certainly appealing.
I just want to add to that because I think Penn State has plenty of capability to beat Auburn, and there's a reason why the people with money on it think Penn State's a slight favorite. But Penn State was in a COVID year in which was really hard to gauge, 4-5. And by my math, which could be wrong, but I think it is correct, in that 4-5 season, their last four games were all victories against Michigan, Rutgers, Michigan State, and Illinois. Michigan went 2-4. Rutgers went 3-6. Michigan State went 2-5. And Illinois went 2-6. If I added that up right, it is a grand total of beating those four teams who had an overall record of 10-21. Now, you can also point out that Auburn did not necessarily beat anyone of note last season. Maybe the best team that they beat was Ole Miss, and that was controversial, as was the Arkansas game. And to some extent, while they beat Kentucky more soundly, I don't think anyone's blown away by beating Kentucky. So they my beat point the is defending saying that national judging champions. Teams on 2020 numbers is not the best way to do it, but that when you're looking at a blue chip ratio of both teams around 65%, I'm trying to convince myself, boys. I'm trying to convince myself.
Sure.
I feel going into this game pretty similarly to how I felt about the Oregon game, where, you know, both teams are going to be super talented. I'm not really convinced about any one thing. I don't know what I know about this team. Just because I haven't seen it against legitimate competition at this point. And while beating up on bad teams is good, it's not going to tell me what's going to happen when we go against a top 10 defense like Penn State. You know, you said it earlier, it probably comes down to just a couple plays. Both teams are going to want to run the ball, and I don't think it's going to happen against either of these defenses unless one of the quarterbacks can make some big plays. They don't have to be dynamite all game, but they're going to have to open up the box. Otherwise, Penn State defense will do exactly what the Alabama State defense did and put nine guys in the box and just try their hardest not to let Tank Bigsby beat them. And Penn State, if they put nine in the box, will stop Tank Bigsby. It's up to Bo Nix at that point to win the game.
I wanted to jump in and let everyone listening to the podcast know, yes, this is still the Orange and True podcast, despite how informative Painter was before Ryan.
We got some hard-hitting analysis, guys.
I think the most informative this podcast has ever been.
Let me do
analysis is aggressive, but occasionally I decide to do some algebra, so thank you for throwing a bone my way.
Let me say, I can't wait to come on his podcast and say things like, whichever team can run the ball and stop the run has a really good chance.
Whichever team executes on three or four plays really looks like the team I'd like to bet on.
Third downs are going to be pivotal in this game.
Who is going to be signed in the kicking game?
What's more important to you guys?
Auburn's usually the one who wins that.
Yeah, for sure.
What's more important to you guys? How many times an announcer refers to a third down as a big third down? Or how many times in an NBA game five someone says crucial game five or pivotal game five? because I like both a lot. I love it when the announcer reminds me that this play, this 3rd and 6 with 2 minutes left, is a that's a big third down, guys.
It's a must-win play.
Well, or if it's, you know, if it's a 3rd down with 2 minutes left, you know, hey, this is 4 down territory.
I love it. I love it also in like the first quarter when it's not really a big 3rd down. When the color commentator says something like, you know, this is actually a pretty big 3rd down. Like, whoa, this is a big 3rd down? Let me get put my 3rd down pants on. Didn't realize. Listen for that. Listen for the big 3rd downs that maybe aren't, maybe you weren't thinking they're going to be big 3rd downs. But
so yeah. I am getting a little nervous about like just the first 7 minutes of the game. Like there's that video circulating that's been online that is a good video and I think points out that Penn State is a fun, cool environment and quite frankly one of the best in all of college football, especially when they do a wideout.
Sure.
And there's this idea that Auburn fans have that, you know, Auburn is taking the next step and Bo Nix is having fun and we're all having fun with that. But Bo Nix has not had a lot of fun on the road, nor has Auburn as a program since halfway through the 2010s. And I guess what I'm getting at here is can we not make any big mistakes? And is like there's this nice little video clip that is resurfacing now of Penn State and Michigan where Michigan calls a timeout before the clock ever starts. And it's just like, can we not do that?
Yeah.
Just, you know, audible into a quarterback sneak. And I know a lot of people would be like, well, that's an inefficient 1st down play. And it's like, I don't care. Just don't call a timeout with 15 minutes on the clock in the first quarter, please.
This is all exactly the reason that I'm going to be hard to deal with if we win this game, because it'll signify that we have done. Even if Penn State stinks, it's going to be a tough environment to play in. They can stink and still beat us there, I think. So if we can go there and not screw it up and actually show that we are good, then I'm going to be really excited about what's to come the rest of the season.
All right. Well, guys, that's as good a place as any to end this thing. I think we should all just barn hard and just imagine, just visualize the victory. And keep reading the good stuff at collegemagnolia.com, including the stuff that I put out, which whether or not it's good is up to the beholder, I guess.
And, you got the best source in the entire beat, I think.
Yeah, man. I'm pounding the pavement.
Do we think that Penn State's having the same conversation right now, given
No, they every Penn State fan I know is a bit arrogant. So
love that.
Yeah, they have thought they had this for a long time. And I think there is a mix of talking themselves into the 2 games we played didn't matter, or and whether it does to them or not, and just it completely ignoring it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
this
line, if it had come out, if you jumped on a line before the season started, I think it would have been somewhere around 9 or 10 points. So the fact that it's creeping down shows what a lot of people have witnessed. And the fact that, yes, it was Akron, and yes, it was Alabama State, but Auburn's been very efficient outside of the first half against Alabama State. And even then, there were plays there. It's just, you know, 11 o'clock kickoffs are absolutely terrible and should be abolished. Because Shug Jordan said, football should be played on campus, on grass, in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, everybody who's listening to this, have a War Eagle weekend.
Who knows?